Ah, yes, indeed, 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 indeed. Attention, boys, girls, moms and dads, grandmas, grandpas, children of all ages, ships at sea, be on the alert. Actually, on the alert. Watch out, watch out. Rogue radio show coming at you. I'm really, you know, ships at sea of Wi-Fi now, because the only place you can get that is fishandfranks.com. They've got the one, the only, radio fishing with Fish and Frank here in the chair and Robert in the chair across from me. It is going to be a special day, a very special day, where everybody coming in on the short bus.
Yes, exactly.
It's coming in. All right. But what a great way to start the day. We're here. And customer brings in, and all of a sudden, here's this. What was the name of that plant in the movie that ate all the people?
I forget. Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, the Little Shop of Horrors. You know, and all of a sudden, this customer comes in and brings Robert this plant. I guess you must have helped him out on his fishing or something.
And oh, I've traded plants with him. He's actually the one that got that same plant for Terry last year. That
gotcha.
I had him get that one for you. And I didn't get one because I wanted her to have it. So he's been a year in the making of getting that one.
And this one's a monster. I mean, it looks like it's going to start singing and eating blood any minute now. I mean,
it's, hence the name Bat Plant.
Yeah, it's okay. Vampire Bat Plant. Okay. Anyway, you know, I got to say, that's probably the coolest part of working here is the relationship with the people that come in.
Oh,
it's
awesome.
Yeah, I know it sounds kind of corny and everything else, but it's the only reason you would do this job.
Absolutely. I mean,
it doesn't pay enough. What was that pop?
I don't know. The second time it did it.
Wow. The job doesn't pay enough, you know, to hang out here and do all this. But the interaction between, you know, the people that come in the door and everything, I was at Luigi's after the show, and this couple, I spent, probably a half hour, 40 minutes with them. Kale spent an hour or so with them, and they went out and did what, you know, they said, we want to catch fish, and we haven't caught anything and everything else. So I told them what to do, and, you know, they bought the stuff. They spent about $80, you know, and, but they went out, and everything worked. They caught the fish. They had to chase a big shark with the boat. They had all this. I mean, it was just so cool.
Everything went perfect.
They were just so ecstatic about the whole thing. And that's the only thing that makes this worthwhile.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, I got to tell you, the stress with the, you know, the taxes and the paperwork and
inventories
and, oh my God, this place.
There's a long list for the negatives.
The long list of negatives. The only.
But the few positives just surpass them.
Yeah, and the one positive is the people that come in the front door.
Absolutely.
It's literally, I don't know how, why other, I don't get, because I go into most stores and they complain about their customers. Why would you complain about the people that keep you alive?
Right.
They pay your bills.
Right.
But why don't you just get to know them?
Right.
That's the easiest thing to do. Just get to know them. I mean, there's so many great people in the world.
Yeah, right, there's like 0.01% anyway. In this world that's a jerk that you just can never, ever fix.
But 0.5% constant.
Right.
That's my constant number. I've never seen it go below or really above that. 0.5%.
To let that small amount interfere with the rest of your day? Big deal.
Boy, we hit that one in stereo harmony.
Right.
You take the upper fifth, I'll take the lower third. All right, but getting back in here, we got a fishing report to do, and that was enough. All right, so we're going to do a fishing report, and where are we going to, I think, I'm not sure where we should start. Maybe upriver, or I don't really know. Where do you want to start?
We can start upriver. We'll just do a walk around the harbor, since it's been a while since we've done that.
All right,
the last few times have always been in alphabetic order. Let's do one and
go
around it.
Let's go walk around the harbor.
Sounds perfect. Well, up there, in, you know, from Harbor Heights area over into the trestle over there by Shell Creek. Been some snook moving around, a few oddball redfish, a lot of juvenile tarpon with a few adult tarpon. It's definitely not gangbusters, but there is some activity up there, and plus the beauty of it right now is absolutely incredible. I mean, it's just awesome place to go.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, You've taken me up there on so many different trips up there on that river to see the rookeries. All the birds are starting to nest right now with some fledglings.
Oh, yeah. That's gators. Actually true. There's a bunch of...
So we can kind of mix it up and just...
The wood storks and the egrets and all that just starting to nest. So it's actually pretty cool.
It is. You know, it's... I mean, it doesn't have to just be about the fishing. It can be about actually enjoying the whole thing. As you know, just being outdoors. You know, and then as you get closer down to 75, they're catching a few trout, though. There's no quantity.
You know, I was just looking up on the fish report. I have the wrong dates. I've got 4.6. It's supposed to be 5.9. How do I got 4.6 out of 5.9? I got to go back and redo all these dates. I'm like, are you kidding me? I didn't change the one. It's right at the top, but all the rest of them are wrong. All right. So, anyway, that's a lot of typing going to be done today.
Yes, it is.
So
it's not fun.
All right, let's go I-75.
Right around I-75, you know, the trout have been there. They're not quantity by any means, but the quality is a little bit better. Some of these guys are catching some 18, 19 inch trout up there. Been some really big black drum around the pilings, along with a lot of juvenile tarpon, like, and not the tiny guys. There's been the little 5 pounders, but there's been quite a few in that 50 to 60 pound range too. Heard of a couple small sharks up there around the bridge itself, in between the two bridges. A few snook, oddball redfish, and whiting. You know, once again, not gangbusters, but definitely a little bit of a variety.
Yeah, I would have to say the black drum's probably the bigger story up there right now. That with the and the jacks.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the jacks.
Yeah, that was one thing I wanted to bring up, because big jacks work in the rivers right now.
Haven't they been like 8 to 10 pounders?
Oh yeah, they came behind the house the other day.
Scared. Oh really?
Terry was out spraying weeds and stuff, because our yard is a mess. I mean, the place is a disaster. It's embarrassing. This last year I've been so involved with IRS audits and all this other garbage that I just, you know, kind of let everything go, and myself and everything else, and trying to get healed up and all that between my health and the government. There's no two worse things for you than bad health and government.
Right.
And
one usually affects the other significantly, too.
Boom, 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 boom. All these jacks started hitting back in the canal. And she was like, what the heck is that?
You know? And well, all the dogs were barking. It's always so peaceful and quiet back there, so I can imagine. That's so awesome.
With the dogs barking and everything else, and all these jacks start exploding. It's a, you look for them when you go up river from the Harbor Heights power lines. You going north up, and you'll see power lines as you go up the river, and where that narrows out, and then back down to I-75 on the bridge. And if you get into them, they're just amazing. There's for some reason or other, the little jacks don't come up the river, but those big ones. Boy, they get up there and they are a fight. When I was chartering, I would tell, you know, toss out and boom, boom, two hookups, and be sitting there. And they're going, I'm running. I said, whoever breaks off first, we're going to chase the other one down, because there's no way to chase two fish going in opposite directions.
That's awesome.
So, you know, it was always just a matter of, you know, who was going to run out of line, who was going to break off. And they're like, oh, tighten the drag. I says, well, you know, you could try it, but they're pulling hard enough where I don't think that's going to stop them. It's just going to be whoever breaks first, whoever has a little more line on there, you know, it's going to be the one that wins.
Absolutely. But that's fun.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I had a ball with that. But you're literally, you know, hunting for them like you would triple tail.
Yeah.
It's not like you can go there and anchor up and fish for them. Because they might be a mile up the river one way or 2 miles down the other way. You're kind of cruising along, and then you see the big splashes and the swirls when they start feeding. And that's when the hunt starts.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking for them, and once you see them, and then you can try fishing for them. But just to go up there and fish for them, you're not going to... You've got a very small chance of success.
You'll see them out there blitzing on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome.
All right, sliding down to... Let's hit Lashley Park and, you know, the dead oyster beds. And what's going on at Lashley Park?
The nighttime, there's been some snook being caught there with some small tarpon. In the early evenings and the first thing in the morning, there's been a few whiting and a few mangrove snapper. I've heard
a hit or miss snapper all day.
Yeah. Well, with this full moon, it's been more of an early morning and evening thing. You know, the fish have been feeding all night long because it's been pretty clear skies since Thursday, really. So the activity seems to be like right at that first light and then slows down a little bit in the middle of the day and then starts to pick back up in the afternoon.
Yeah, I've been off my feet for a few days, so I haven't seen anything trying to heal up.
Right.
Old age is so wonderful.
Turpentine and rust.
Yeah, turpentine and rust. Maybe that's what I need to start ingesting. Maybe that'll help me get over this.
Right.
So, anyway.
And a few Spanish mackerel around there and an oddball cobia, too.
41 Bridge.
Yeah. Kind of the same.
Kind of the same, but a little different because up on the bridge, you're getting more sharks, more cobia, a lot more tarpon. I don't know. They're so close together, you think it would be almost identical, but it's really not. There's a lot more snook. There's a lot more of everything up on the bridges. And the black drum. Now, the black drum, that school at I-75, they seem to go from I-75 and then head out. And right now, they're all drumming it up, calling each other, trying to get in these big schools. It's got to be a mating thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else it could be, that or, you know, black drum really know how to party. I mean, these guys, yeah, man, you know, they go out, they party hardy, you know. Yeah, and there must be something hallucinogenic about blue crabs because, I mean, they're just huge, massive schools. Either that or it's just, you know.
Well, and the weird part is with this school that's out there, you know, every late March, first week of April, they come in through Gasparilla Pass and work their way up the intercoastal. And then they bounce around the center of the harbor for 2 to 4 weeks, and then they all of a sudden just kind of break apart because it's a school of a couple thousand fish, and they're all in that 30 to 50 pound range. This year, they're still schooled up. There's a big school moving back and forth between the 75 and 41.
Going out into the harbor.
Right, and then there's another giant school down still in the southern part of the harbor. We saw them out there on Friday.
There's literally 2 to 3 of these schools out there. It's not one. There's 2 to 3. There's more schools than people think. They see this huge school and they think, okay, that's the school everybody's talking about.
Broken apart.
But there's literally so many of them that it's multiple schools. It's not one. And because I had reports the other day, Saturday, of guys seeing them south in the harbor and another guy seeing them almost up by the rubber tire reef.
Right.
So there's definitely more than one school. So what we were thinking, hundreds or 1,000 in a school, we'll multiply that by 2 or 3.
Right.
So there's a lot of these big drum out there.
Yeah, and the school we saw was easily 500 strong.
It's one of the reasons I'm still kind of iffy. I would like to see commercial shrimping banned in through the estuary, and possibly let the people who are here keep their jobs. I don't want to put anybody out of work, but we need to stop anybody. If you don't live here, if you haven't been shrimping here for a couple of years now and making a living at that, if you're making your living, let's not take anybody's jobs, but let's ban anybody else. Grandfather those people in, give them a special pass to shrimp in the harbor and kick everybody else out. No more of the shrimping in the harbor. That's hundreds or thousands of shrimp, millions that get taken by the commercial boats. And the difference between a bait boat and a commercial boat is the commercial boat throws all the small stuff back. And as anybody's ever been in a bait shop, the bait boats, they go out, they get a certain number of shrimp and go home. The commercial boats run until the nets slow down, and they literally get so full they have to slow down because everything's going to be dead anyway. They got to throw it on ice, so right. Why keep it alive? Too much work, too. Lazy buggers. And so it's just a bad thing. We're killing all this food that could be bringing in all these fish.
Right.
I mean, when you have thousands and thousands of drum, that takes tens of thousands of shrimp to keep them alive.
Yeah.
And crabs and fish and everything else. So we need to stop the commercial shrimping in Charlotte Harbor. Do the exact same thing as Tampa did. You know, just done. No right. more.
These are the permits, and when they were, if you don't renew it, it's done, and it's non-transferable.
Yeah, non-transferable, grandfathered in. That way they make a living. But this, the rape and pillage has to stop. You know, no more taking advantage of our resources on a windy night and dragging everything flat, you know. So anyway, that was me up on my soapbox, and back to the fishing. We're over in Port Charlotte, back up in the canals,
over along the mouths of the canals, basically going from 41 Bridge over to the beach complex area. There's been a lot of moderate sized cobia, some tarpon, whole lot of small sharks, been a few whiting. And then as you move up into the canals, mainly especially at the mouths of the canals, you've got the jacks of variety sizes, mostly on the smaller side, like you were talking about. The smaller ones seem to be down here. And then some sand bream, a few mango snapper. A lot of the snook are starting to really move out of the canals quite a bit. So this canal might be loaded with snook, and then the next canal you might not find very many at all. And then it moves down, and you know, it's hopscotch a little bit with those guys. And then various tarpon, you know, the Edgewater Lake, East Spring Lake, loaded with an assortment of sizes of tarpon, mostly on the smaller side. So if some of the fly guys out there, they're having a field day catching a lot of those little tarpon in that 10 to 40 pound range.
Well, you know, that area around Port Charlotte Beach, you got probably about 3 months out of the year where that pier really lights up.
Right.
I mean, really lights up. And it's cobia and shark and all that other kind of stuff. All the snook moving out of all the canals in Port Charlotte. Really stop by and spend at least some time underneath that Port Charlotte Beach pier.
Right.
Because all them leaving the canals, getting ready to go out and spawn at the Gulf, I mean, it's the last major structure before you hit open harbor.
Right.
So you get so many snooks out there. The biggest snook I've ever hooked up with was at Port Charlotte Beach. I mean, 50 some inches, it was sitting right below me, dead still, raised up. I had a freshwater shiner on, raised up and grabbed it in his jaw, and then the ensuing fight was just spectacular. But when he first did it, he didn't realize there was a hook and line and a bait and anything. He just kind of came up like a submarine in the night, and here he is, and he just grabbed that bait real easy, just kind of sucked it right in, and he's sitting there, and he's just laying right there, and I'm yelling to my buddy, get the net, and he's freaking out, you know. I mean, I'm freaking out, and he's not freaking out. He's going, you get the net, you want the net. I got a big fish on. No, you don't have a fish on. We're arguing back and forth. I didn't talk to him for 5 years after that.
Seriously?
Yeah, because if he would have brought me my net, we could have got him into the net, and that fish was legal at that time. You were allowed, you know. It was still two per day.
36 inches or larger.
Yeah, I mean, well, there was a slot. There was two fish. So one was in the slot, and one was a minimum size, but you like trout, where you keep one big one, and black drum, where you have one big one, and the rest are in the slot.
24, or was it 22?
I think it was 24 inches to 36.
With one over.
And one over that. And he was way over that. Biggest one I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of pictures, but this was still a monster fish. But anyway,
so that's pretty cool.
That was my record-breaking snook that I never got to land, because I made zoop, ping, underneath the pier he went.
I've seen some big fish down there.
So anyway, back to the real world. Enough remembrance and imaginings, you know. Anyway, going back into the real world. Moving around Alligator Bay, we come up, we got Hog Island, and that flat out in front of there, we marked it on a chart as Frank's Flat, because my dad always used to fish there for cobia and shark and everything. It was one of my dad's all-time favorite places. But the cobia cruising across there, there's some redfish. If you know where the Monica Cutoff and Rocky Creek is, and then just to the east or kind of northeast of there, there's a bunch of grass, and out in front of there's several little like troughs. It's almost like somebody dug three or four little troughs across there, and those redfish lay up in there. And the first time you go there, you'll find them, and that means you're not going to catch any fish, because until you find them, you don't know where to fish.
Right.
But when you find them, you're already on top of your fish, and it's over.
Yeah,
so
you spook them out.
You go there and figure out where they are, and then come back around, and next time you come, anchor back and cast over onto them. And whether it's with a shrimp or a white bait or whatever you got, but that's the way though you're going to find those redfish there. Getting out in front of Hog Island, you got cobia, small sharks. Anything going on up in the Mayaca?
Been a lot of snook scattered around up in there, and I've heard of a few redfish, but not very good numbers. Beginning of last week, a guy caught like a 35-inch cobia in there. He thought it was like once he thought he was you. He thought he had a world record snow cone for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, being up in there in those tight quarters, a cobia is kind of one of the last fish you really expect to catch up in there.
Yeah.
Not super, super surprising, but definitely unusual and unique.
Oh, no. I mean, when you're back in a foot and a half to 2 feet of water, you just don't expect 80-pound, 60-pound, 80-pound cobia to be back there
right,
looking for food. And it makes sense. That's what they like to eat is all back there. But it still doesn't make human sense. The fish is too big to be here.
Right.
You know? And then all of a sudden you're hooked up like, oh, my God. So anyway, going through the cutoff on the back end, we got a little bit of actually quite a few snook and redfish back on the, I guess it'd be the north end, the Mac River end. Of the
closer to Tippy Canoe.
Yeah, in the cutoff. Tippy Canoe's got some redfish in it, and not a lot of snook in Tippy Canoe. But getting up on Elgin Bean's
been incredible. I mean, the last few nights have been phenomenal out there. A lot of guys doing some catch and release big snook. Been hooking into some small to moderate-sized tarpon. And then a couple guys have caught some really big trout. Only a couple, but, you know, 22, 23... one guy got a 25-inch trout out of there. I think that was Thursday night. And then you've had some mangrove snapper of assorted sizes. But for those guys, it's mostly been an evening bite. During the daytime, they're catching some smaller mangrove snapper. Still a few lingering sheep's head there. And they've been also catching quite a few small sharks. You know, some black tips, a couple black nose, miscellaneous stuff. But it's been good. You know, it's been real good.
Yeah,
the only thing I haven't heard about is any Spanish or any real big cobia, because usually this time of year, those guys that like to fish off the seawall usually hook into a few big cobia. And I'm sure they're there because they're scattered so much all over the other place. We just probably haven't had anyone come in to say they've been catching them. So I would be going out there and messing with it.
Now, it's just pretty cool up through the whole area. We're not into the water temperatures yet where we have to travel towards the Intercoastal and Bull Bay and all the way down there. There's
right.
still so many fish up here. We did the whole seminar at Luigi's this month was on open water fishing. And speaking of that, I guess we're going to go down the east side of the our west side of the harbor, west wall fishing.
Well, as you're working your way down the west wall, along Cattle Dock Point, keep your eyes out towards the center of the Myakka River, because there has been some tarpon in there. Not a lot, but enough where if you come across them, it's worth checking in on them and fishing them, because they don't have any pressure on them right now. So keep an eye out for those guys. Go over there and try to work it. Been a lot of little sharks mixed in with them, and it's a little early in the season for this, but the catfish have kind of moved in out there too, so you're going to be fighting catfish, shark, cobia, along with the tarpon, so it's kind of a mixed gamut.
Yeah, but on the other hand, keep in mind fresh catfish tails, or even if you get a small live one,
throw them back on.
They're great bait for tarpon.
And cobia and small shark, they'll all eat it, but tarpon love them.
Yeah, you would just never think of somebody with something with spikes on it like that.
Yeah. A ring shank nail, no less.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a three barbed spikes that are just like six penny nails or better, and you know, but like you say, ring shanked.
Yeah.
And these fish swallow them, you know,
and don't blink an eye. That's the terrifying part.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, a lot of respect for those fish where they can eat something like that and survive it.
Right.
So, you know, people say, well, you got a hook in his jaw. I'm sorry, this fish just ate a catfish with big spikes sticking all over through it. I don't think the hook hurt him.
Didn't faze him a bit.
You know, they got a little extra exercise. That was about it. Cause, you know, you take your time, let them go and all that. But a lot of snook, a lot of redfish along that west side right
yeah.
now. More snook than anything. I mean, it's really showing that migration path better this year than any year I've seen in recent history.
Which is cool to see, finally.
Yeah, it's so many fish, you know, moving. Those snook, if they spawn in freshwater areas, it's no problem. They can spawn there, but the eggs don't float. They don't ever hatch. Probably 90% of them sink to the bottom and die.
Right.
And in the salt water, you have 90-some percent hatch, you know, and become fry and little fish and go on. So they do move out, and we are getting just enough rains here and there to tell the snook, no, you can't be here, you have to move out to, and it's unfortunate because they're happening on Fridays and Saturdays, busy days for us, it cost us a lot of money, but it's giving us huge snook populations. It's so much better for the fish. So I'm going to forgive the, you know, few hundred dollars I'm losing, you know, a week, and just say, good for Mother Nature, you know, keep this up.
Yeah.
And getting down to Cape Hayes, I've heard about a few pompano, and I know there's a lot of sharks right around Cape Hayes. Yeah. Anything else?
Mostly the pompano and the sharks are various. You know, the bonnet heads have been real, real predominant, along with some Atlantic sharp nose and a few black tips. Just as you get on the other side of Cape Hayes, basically the Boca Grande side of Cape Hayes along that trough, if you're willing to anchor, if it's an incoming tide, let your baits kind of anchor on the other side of the channel and let your baits fish drift up towards that clump. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. I just, for some reason, I can't get my mouth to work properly. I want to sound excited and, you know, all, you know, up about the fishing and all
that. It's like my brain's moving faster than my lips and tongue want
to
go.
Yeah, because I got all this stuff to say, but I can't get it out.
I know.
Yeah, and you're listening to me going, yeah, right, Frank, you haven't shut up all morning. You know? Okay, but it's true. It's true. Let me put it this way. I'm not being as coherent as I would like to be. I'm saying lots of stuff, just not being, it just doesn't strike me as random intelligent thought. How's that?
There you go.
Okay. So.
But there's been some bluefish there, not a lot, but a few, along with some Spanish mackerel, some ladyfish, a few jacks. Oddball trout. I mean, there's been kind of a mixed gamut cruising back and forth along that trough, which is cool. You know, it's fun, something different. You know, breaks it up a little bit when you never know. Each cast is going to be something a little different. I know a couple customers like to slow troll right along the edge of that trough heading in towards turtle and then turn around and go back out towards marker five, just kind of slowly trolling because of the variety of stuff that they'll knock out that way, especially with that storm twitch stick. I mean, that's been really, really good for a variety of stuff there. I mean, yeah, it's great for a variety of everything, but...
Who would have ever guessed? A stupid-looking, kind of nothing bait. But you know the other one, the stupid-looking nothing bait, is the Mirror Lure Little John.
Right.
There's... I mean, it just kind of tapers off a pinched-out little... You know, it's round tube-shaped, and it's thick at one end and thin at the other end, and... Mm-hmm. And that and the Storm Twitch consistently outfish so many of these more beautiful looking, I mean, you know.
And expensive.
And expensive, yeah. I mean, we have lures $18-$20.
Right.
And this $6.49 lure is kicking their behind. I mean, just really just going for it. Who would have ever guessed the number one lure we've ever had? Thousands upon thousands of them have sold, and people are still buying them.
Yeah,
I mean, and literally thousands. We're not talking hundreds.
And crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean,
and I like it when somebody comes in and they've caught something different on it. I mean, I had a guy catch a pinfish the other day on one.
Yeah, I've done that. I've actually used it to catch my bait one day. I caught pinfish on them. I felt that tap, 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 and tap, tap, set to hook, and boom, got a little. It, you know, it was. Snagging pinfish, but you know, right. They weren't big enough to bite the hook, but they were perfect bait. I went on to catch a, you know, some snook and redfish and stuff with the pinfish where I wouldn't have had pinfish.
Yeah. And then there's, I mean, a guy caught a blue runner on one. I mean, it's just, it's kind of funny. Mangrove snapper we hear about semi-regularly enough where it doesn't really shock you anymore.
And which is weird because there's only a handful of lures in the world that can catch a mangrove snapper.
Right. I mean, you can't target them with it, but don't be surprised when you catch them with it. You know, it's just...
And then Vinny trolling one for and hits a 20-pound king mackerel on it.
Right.
And actually gets it in the boat. You know, so who's to say? And, you know, if you're listening up north, hopefully, you know, you're sitting around in New York or Canada, and we've got so many amazing people listen to us up in Canada, and... You're wondering, you know, what should I bring to Florida when I come down to fish? The Storm Twitch, the only place in the world that sells well is in Canada for bass fishing.
Yeah.
It's a bass lure that is primarily marketed in Canada, and we got it by accident, and it turned out to be a phenomenon. And so if you're sitting there listening and you're going, you know, well, should I bring what? You should bring your bass rods, a musky rod, and a crappie rod.
Yep.
And the lures corresponding. bring the stuff you know how to use. The only thing we you got to do is come in so we can teach how to put a leader on.
Right.
And whether you're using monofilament or braid or whatever, you still want to use the leader. And once we teach you how to put a leader on, and if you got crazy and bought the leader, it's like $20. Or, no, $11, I guess. $10 or $11. We've got, yeah. We've got a lot.
Depends on the brand.
Yeah, nine.
And that's
eight,
if you go with fluorocarbon.
Fluorocarbon, yeah. So $8 up, you know, buying the leader. It's really all you need to do that. And fishing in reel and salt water isn't going to hurt it. Not for a week or 3 days. It, you know, just rinse it off good and wipe it down when you get home and you're fine.
Don't submerge it or drag it on the beach. It's perfectly fine. A saltwater reel doesn't handle that. I don't care if it's a freshwater reel. You know, drag it down the beach or dunk it underwater for long periods of time. That's like anything else. Don't abuse your stuff.
The one thing you got to watch out for is rods with gold eyes on.
Yes, that is an issue.
Gold eyes on the rods. If you've got a nice rod that you're using for bass fishing or musky fishing and it has gold colored guides on it, you know, the rings that go up, the guides, make sure that if you can switch it for something else. If you can't, make sure when you're done fishing, you spray each of those guides really good with WD-40.
Right.
You can use get some, but WD-40 is cheaper, and all you're doing is cleaning the salt off of it. Rinsing it is not going to do it.
Nope.
Those guides will corrode up and rot off your rod. Anything gold colored just corrodes and rots really fast. We just quit carrying them. And because most of our people use them in salt water. If I was in a freshwater market, it would be fine.
Right.
The gold-colored guides are great. They look good on the rods. They work great. But in salt water, they eat up really quickly. So spray them all down with WD-40. And then when you're leaving at the end of the day, or you know your trip's over and you're going back home, spray them with WD-40 and wipe them off with a rag. Just spend a little bit of time wiping them off, and you won't have the issue. But you got to clean it off before you go home. If you don't clean those and wipe them, you will lose half the guides in your rod within the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just weird how that works.
I don't know what it is. There's got to be something. I mean, it's, you know, there's.
Isn't gold supposed to be, like, super anti-corrosive?
I mean, they find it all the time with shipwrecks and everything else. And gold paint of anything has real gold in it to a certain extent. You know, so it's weird. I don't understand why it would be so corrosive, unless it's just because the bonding agents that they've got to use to hold that gold together is not corrosive resistant. You know, that's about the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah, maybe the plating process is what does it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I don't know why all that works. It's not really that important, but, you know.
It's useless knowledge for somebody.
Good useless knowledge, you know. If I was in Wisconsin or Minnesota or Michigan or Ohio or whatever, because some gorgeous rods, very, very expensive rods, come with those. Daiwa did that for a long time, put gold guides on the rod because they look so good.
Absolutely. And they were a beautiful rod.
And there's no doubt that in freshwater, you're just not going to have the problems. But, you know, I guess it's worthwhile bringing up for the fact. And the hardest thing about it is figuring out what you do to come to Florida to go fishing. And to me, that's one of the big things, is rinse when you're done at the end of the day. But when you're leaving, WD-40, some kind of good cleaning agent. WD-40 is absolutely horrible as a lubricant. It is not a lubricant. It is not going to break your stuff free. It's not going to make things work better. But it cleans really, really well.
Great, great cleaning agent.
I mean, you want to take tar off your car, WD-40. You want to get, you know, love bugs. If you're coming to Florida in love bug season, before you come down, wipe the front of your car with WD-40 or something like that. Make it slick. And then the bugs hit, and they don't stick, and you can just wipe them off and reapply the stuff rather than trying to scrape those love bugs off. Oh, my God. I've seen them a couple times this year, but nothing bad yet.
Not yet.
So, anyway, getting back into the fishing, it's amazing to me how different it is between the outside of Bull and Turtle Bay from, let's say, the entrances in, coming out into the straits from Boca, then you get in 20 feet.
Night and day.
And that's,
and it's like a light switch too.
Yeah, I mean, it can be spectacular outside, nothing inside, spectacular inside, nothing outside. Two separate worlds.
Yeah.
Completely different worlds.
And it doesn't seem like the tides are making a difference. The moon's not really making a difference. Literally today, this tide, crush them on the outside. Go to tomorrow, same tide, same weather, and it's all on the inside.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
confusing is a good word for this, because there's no logical answer. It's just, but they're both two big bays.
Right.
And I mean, there's a lot of water back behind those bays, but outside, you know, it drops off very quickly and you're in 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 feet of water right away. Inside, the deepest spot back, there's, you know, 5 or 6 foot.
Right.
Average depth behind, inside the bays is probably around 2 foot. And then you get outside where you just have, you know, huge depths of water, at least for here.
Right.
You know,
it's a relative term.
If you are from the Midwest, you're used to fishing glacier-cut lakes. The glaciers move through there and cut these big, deep lakes out. We don't have that. We have sand pits.
Yeah.
And it's just like you're moving down.
I don't even
know
consider it a sand pit.
And you have an
it's more like a rut in a road.
Right. Up north, we always ran IOs, inboard outboards. It was, you know, it was great. But here, if you've got an inboard outboard and you're planning on moving to Florida, sell it there.
Yes.
Get rid of it and get yourself something with an outboard. And the only thing you don't want to bring to Florida is a riveted hull aluminum boat.
Right.
A welded hull is fine, but a riveted hull aluminum boat in the salt water, it will eat the rivets.
Yeah.
You have to put zinc tabs on the aluminum boat itself, not the ones on the motor. They have to be on the boat, because if you allow that boat sliding across salt water with a motor on it, creating electricity and all the rest of this stuff, it will eat the rivets out of that darn boat. It's the only boat that's not good for Florida. As long, I mean, deck boats, pontoon boats, they're all great. But the rivets on the boat, electrolysis goes for the softest metal first, and that's the rivets. The only thing softer than that is the zinc. But if you have an outboard, any boat with an outboard is good down here. Inboards and IOs are just no good because you can't tilt them up. You cannot go. It eliminates half our fishing as soon as you have that IO on there. And I've seen the brackish water. It's worse than salt water. It's 400 times worse than fresh water. I've seen it eat an outdrive out in 6 months. Eat a hole right into the outdrive in 6 months. Because the guy had lights on his dock. And the
electricity
little short
there.
In the lights, the poles were wet. Carrying that electricity down into the water literally ate a hole in his outdrive in 6 months. So, you
That's
know.
Scary.
It's just a whole different ballgame. But an outboard, you just tilt it up, get it out of the water, no issue.
Right.
So, anyway, going back and forth. Oh, and one other thing about this, because we're going to have to split the fishing report into two parts. We're getting into half an hour here. What was I going to say? If you come to Florida with your boat, you have 3 days to take it out of the water.
Right.
If you're going to be here for 7 days, on your third day, put it back on the trailer, wash it, rinse it, make sure you get all the barnacle growth off. Make sure you let it dry good before you get it back in the water. Because if you wash it and rinse it and put it back in the water, those barnacles are still alive.
Right.
And they're going to continue to grow. And you're going to have a mess in 7 days. Whether you're running the boat or not running the boat. You, 3 days, take the boat out, wash it, rinse it, and then let it dry. Then put the boat back in. And it's just simple as taking the boat out, leaving it out of the water overnight, and then putting it back in again, and then go the next 3 days until you're going home. Other than that, you know, but bottom paint is full of poison, and that's what kills the barnacles trying to attach to it. Some of them try to make it so slick, and it doesn't work because everything gets a little funky.
Exactly.
So, all right, and let me see. Hang on just here for just a second. Anyway, so we're going on. Let's get out and go along the intercoastal. Kaopalu, Devilfish, working our way north towards Boca Grande or towards Placida along the tailing flats. There, anything going on out there?
Yeah, there's a lot of scattered snook throughout there. You know, because they're on their migration out towards the beaches. So there's just numbers after numbers moving in and out of there. One spot you might have is your favorite spot, and there's nothing there, and then come back an hour later, and hey, it's like a magic trick. All of a sudden, it's stacked.
Yep.
It catches you off guard because you're like, I was just here, but you go trolling, motoring around the corner, and you're like, holy crap, where'd they come from?
Exactly. You know, for me, that whole area out there is just so gorgeous because you have the grass waving and the water's clear, and it's just beautiful out there. Now, mind you, I love the brown water because I can afford to live on it. if where I live the water was clear and blue and clean, I could not afford. Same thing with you.
Same thing.
Neither one of us could afford to live there. But it's only a half hour ride by boat to get there. And if I take my boat and kick it a little bit, it's about 15 minutes, you know. But it's just such a nice, it's really what you come to Florida to see, that area along the intercoastal out there.
Yeah.
You know, you can sight cast redfish, you can, you know, but one of the tricks to it is prime time. You've got off time and prime time. And prime time is when everybody normally does their charters, 7 to 2, 7 to 3. And trying to get there before or after that is kind of a key
right.
to really having beautiful success. Middle of the week, go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, you're going to have better times. And if you go on the weekends, because for some reason other retired people wait all week.
To go fishing on the weekend.
To go fishing on Saturday. I'm coming in because I'm going out Saturday. Well,
aren't you retired?
Why don't you go today? There's nobody out there. Well, because I always fish on Saturday.
Right. Always have.
I always have. You know.
Why change now?
Why change now?
Well, and the other fun thing that's, especially right now, I mean, this time of year we talk about May and October being some of the
now, I shouldn't say that anymore. That's the last time I'm ever going to say that, because then all of a sudden my Tuesdays are going to get crowded.
Right. This time of year, like May and October, we always talk about how phenomenal the fishing is because of all the varieties of species. But this time of year in particular, Billy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
This time of year, the water's at its clearest. You know, the rainy season hasn't started yet. And finally, you know, after such a wet winter, it's finally calmed down. But the water out there is almost vodka clear.
Yeah.
Just because I like it better than gin.
Yeah, I used to be a gin guy. I used to do gin and tonic, but now it's all about vodka and tonic.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how I got away from the gin, but vodka is just, yeah, I'm 100% on your side with that. Yeah. Yeah.
So you go with that, you know, it's just clear. And the amount of varieties of fish that you see out there makes it even more interesting, because you can almost go along and go, what was that? You know, trying to identify the different species that you're seeing out there makes it even more enjoyable. Was that a pinfish or was that a flounder? What was that? You know, there's just so much to see as you're drifting across those flats that makes it even much more enjoyable.
Yeah, just shutting everything off, no trolling motor, no nothing, just putting the boat in and just let the boat go across.
Exactly.
And be like a big hole in the water. And it's an amazing what you can see, what you can sight cast at. It's one of the few places I endorse a fly rod. I'm not big on fly fishing in the upper harbor, because I think you should fly fish here, but you should bring your spinning rod and find the fish, because fly fishing is fun, but it's too much time in the air.
Right.
You know, pull it back cast, forward cast, and it's too much time in the air. You spend 25% of your time in the water and 75% of your time in the air. And while some fish will come out of the water to get a fly, they ain't coming that far out.
No.
So it's the difference with a spinning rod is it's an easy flick of the wrist, work your lure, and find some fish, then take out the fly rod. And or if you happen to see some, have the fly rod there rigged, ready to go. And that, to me, is fly fishing the upper harbor. But now you get out in Pine Island Sound, Gasparilla Sound, I will actually have the fly rod in my hand. I won't be working the spinning rod. I'll work the fly. And it's just such a cool place to be, because it's real where you can fly fish.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit, too, when we get down to that area.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to kind of hit Placida, and then we're going to call a halt to this section, and then we're going to come back with another show, and we're going to do this fishing report in segments. I'm too much time BSing and not enough time reporting.
Right.
So anyway, go ahead. Let's
go up to Lemon Bay, and then we'll stop there so we can walk the beaches and work our way down after.
Okay.
That.
Go ahead, Placida.
Placida, all off the trestle right now. The snook activity during the evening and all through the night has been incredible. Some small tarpon. And during the day and night, they were getting some good mangrove snapper, miscellaneous sharks, oddball flounder, just a good mixed gamut of stuff. Even been a few trout being caught off down there. So it's been pretty pretty impressive, you know. And like I said, you know, that water is just so phenomenal right now. It's worth going out there, even if you don't want to fish, but just want to enjoy it. It's cool just to sit out there and just kind of space out and stare into the world and check it all out from a different way and kind of clear your mind.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's very cool. Let's hit Lemon Bay.
Lemon Bay, basically kind of trolling through that miserable mile. They've been getting a few Spanish mackerel, an oddball bluefish, and an oddball trout. But as you get closer towards Stump Pass and Ski Alley, all those docks have been holding some very good snook, some scattered trout, scattered redfish. Gags have made a huge presence this past week everywhere, and especially up in there. Some guys are catching some nice gags in some of those deeper sand holes and underneath some of the docks there too, along with a lot of miscellaneous sharks right out in the more open areas. So it's been kind of fun.
Oh, I agree with you.
The only thing I haven't heard about, which has been unusual because there's so many tarpon everywhere, I haven't heard of a lot of tarpon in the intercoastal up in the Lemon Bay area. It's mainly been on the beach side. And they should be scattered throughout that whole area.
Yeah. But, you know, you never know. It's really how a lot of this stuff works. And yeah. I'm sorry, I was resetting a couple things on the top of the page here on Fishing Report, trying to get caught up, so I was a little distracted for a moment, but I've got it. let's see. Right.
Tarpon missing in there.
Tarpon missing in there. Okay.
It's just kind of weird.
So, sorry about that. I had to get that. I was looking at that. Okay, I got to fix that. You know, shouldn't fix stuff and try and talk. Walking, talking, chewing gum all at the same time, just not.
A little tricky.
Yeah, a little tricky. This is more than I want to handle. I remember when I was younger, I had a whole different, more vulgar description of all that, and I could do all those things.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to say adieu. We're going to come back. We're going to start walking the beaches. And we're going to come back. We're going to do walking the beaches, the Gulf of Mexico, Captiva, Sanibel, all the passes. We're going to come back. Venice, east side of the harbor, Punta Gorda Canals, Pine Island Sound, Boquilla. They're all going to be here. All these cool places. What are we going to do if we open that store in Fort Myers? Oh, my God.
We're going to learn a lot of new areas.
Yeah, this is enough here. Yeah, I'm supposed to meet with him today to find out what's going on with that, if we're going to open that store or not.
You got to meet with the Rapala guys tonight, too.
Yeah, I know. We got a...
Your book is full today.
I got doctor's appointments, and now I got overlapping. I got to call and try and change everything. So, anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening and putting up with us. Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me. We'll be back later today with more of the Fishing Report.